Welcome again, Turkey, John, and this is the Greater Boston Startup Culture Meetup. Thanks for showing up and participating. This is going to be a rather unconventional event tonight. Usually we do a Q&A session with a few panelists, but this is going to be a little bit different. I'm Corey McAmini. How's everybody doing this evening? I'm the organizer of this meetup and the founder of Culture Envy, a company that analyzes workplace culture and helps startups build better startups and make better decisions. And I've been having a lot of startup culture conversations with individual founders and startups, and I realized that this discussion should be taken to a much wider audience, and that's why I decided to start these meetups. So thank you for joining us this evening. I'd also like to really thank our wonderful sponsors, T3 Advisors. They'll be providing some pizza. They'll be coming in sooner or later. And we can all enjoy that and socialize after our discussion.
We also have beer and refreshments over there, too.
So, let's see. I think that what we're trying tonight is going to be a little bit different than the usual Q&A format, like I said. So we'll definitely use your insights, your experiences, and I know that a lot of you have come this evening to get some great tips on how to see office design through the lens of startup culture. And I'll just introduce our three incredible speakers for this evening. Stevie Gomes, he's the architecture designer and community leader at C3, CIC's C3 Co-working Spaces. Vince Kim is the founder at Analog Studio, and John Frisch is the vice president here at T3 Advisors. And I'll let each of you say just a quick bit about what you do, what your background involves, and so people understand where our discussion is coming from.
Sure, I'll start. As I mentioned, T3, we have built a practice specifically to advise technology companies and throughout the life cycle, and so we're sector focused. So depending on what stage in the life cycle you are, we have different teams that you would work with. And I run our Emerging Tech Adventure Group, which is really startup companies up until like growth stage technology. It focuses, the experience is tailored and focuses on working with founders and like C-level executives, folks that have 100 other things to do, and one of those things is finding space for the company. We also have a life science sector, which focuses on advising companies in that space, and there's a whole host of different real estate challenges that come along with a life science company, and a corporate solutions group, which works with companies that typically have like internal facility departments and multiple locations around the country and even internationally. And they have a whole host of different portfolio and real estate challenges as well, and takes a completely different expertise. So that's what I do and what we're about.
So I'm Vince Mann, Corey said, founder of Analog Studio. We are an architecture design studio based actually right upstairs with Mass Challenge. Our primary work sectors are innovation, learning, and culture. We do everything from full-blown architectural design of new buildings, we're working on 200,000 square foot performing arts in New York City right now, all the way down to a small rebranded book design for startups. So our favorite projects are the ones where we get to combine all of those skills together. We're doing graphics, branding, architecture design, furniture. We done work like that with clients that you guys know, Warmfar, The Grotted, Raise Labs. We're working with Fixability right now. So a lot of sort of early stage startups, co-working spaces, and sort of startups moving out of that sort of the first stage. The other sectors of work, learning to do a lot of higher ed and academic work, and finding a lot of it is really informed our other projects, because there's a lot of practices that happen in the school environment that emerge in the work environments. And the other area, the culture, we do a lot of restaurants, performance spaces, shops, that's their kind of catch-all.
Yes, so I'm C.D. Gomes. I graduated from Harvard's Graduate School of Design, and my thesis work was focused on social space design, so how to create spaces to help people interact, collaborate, help build a sense of community. So that's sort of my specialty. I had started around the school sort of 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, which actually led me to meeting the CEO of the Kennedy Innovation Center. And through that, we actually started talking about my background, which is in architecture, and specifically what my thesis was about, and Tim Monroe, which is the CEO of CIC, sort of kind of realized what I was doing a little bit and said I had to start helping them build the spaces. So now I've just designed the spaces for CIC. My first project was just finished. It's the new co-working space in 1 Broadway, Kendall Square, and also the House of the Venture Cafe, if you haven't been there. We designed also for expansion in St. Louis, so we have huge funds that they were taking over. And then also looking at their spaces in Boston, so I've been doing this with the design of them. But again, with this goal, how do you create these kind of centers, spaces that help people commingle, interact, collaborate, and create more and more.
Great. So maybe I can take a quick poll of the audience here tonight. A quick show of hands. How many people are entrepreneurs out there? And how many of you are community managers or similar role at your company? And how many of you are just plain interested in the general discussion on office design and how it influences startup culture and collaboration and innovation? Come on, that's a trick question. And how many of you came here tonight because you're hoping to physically rearrange your office tomorrow morning, first thing, based on tonight's takeaway? Anybody moving soon? I know that there's quite a few folks moving, but hopefully we'll gain some great insights tonight. Okay, so this evening's talk, we'll get started. When I think about startup culture and design, I think about the evolution of our workplace, and it's really still continuing to evolve. But I think that the reason why this is such a hot topic right now is because the traditional office space that was so common and prevalent over the last few decades just doesn't work for us anymore. And we've turned to less traditional spaces and more innovative thinking in order to change that. But just coming here, you see the space at T3 and you see that it's not the same way that a traditional real estate firm would be, you know, 20 years ago. And a lot of it has to do with interaction and collaboration and the culture that you're inspiring, not just internally, but with your entire network. And I think that as we see the workplace evolve, we'll be able to step back and look at, well, in Silicon Valley, for instance, in the late 70s and early 80s, workplace culture involved men wearing ties. And then people like Steve Jobs came along and changed that. And he said, screw that, I'm going to go barefoot. And that changed culture. And the space that we surround ourselves in is influenced by the people who are those forward thinkers. And right now, we have that ability to harness that energy and that line of thinking and run with it. And this is some of the really great work that it will be able to develop further and take with us. And based on the analysis, for instance, that I do in my line of work, I get to see things like how that evolves and what the trends are. So hopefully tonight we can find some interesting ways to talk about where things are headed and what our expectations and our demands are in terms of space and how we use our space to maximize productivity, collaboration, and innovation. I would probably start, when I think about space, I start with identity, and I think about what is a company's identity, because if you know who you are, it's really easier to move forward from that in terms of what you need. So if you know what you value, if you know the purpose of your existence, then everybody as a team has a much easier time working towards those goals. And if you can all work from that same place, it's much easier to say, well, we all will benefit from working in hard back chairs during these hours, and we'll all benefit from sitting in rows instead of circles. And because we know who we are, we know that we need some quiet space. And being aware of these characteristics will help you move forward with knowing how to appropriately place things for your own purposes. So I'd start with awareness. Does anybody have any ideas that they've used or concepts that they've started from to build upon in terms of their own, establishing your own identity at your company and how you think about how you work and how you work best? Anybody?
The way the desk position were near the two functions we just learned from each other, you know, like the marketer would actually learn what you need, vice versa, and how to catch you with.
You're saying it was helpful to have everybody work closely and make
cross-functional. So usually you have like marketing one end, and then they are everybody hands siloed making the lunch.
And how many people were on the team at the time?
How did that work? Was it actually good?
Yeah, it's actually much better because I knew the designer and engineer was doing out the marketing. And then the sales guy actually knew what the day to day went for the designer. And we switched too, so every 2 months or 3 months you have to switch your desk. So you go sit next to somebody else. And there's something about seeing somebody just like his desk was facing this way, I was just facing that way. Kind of see what they were up to, the calls they made, what their day to day was like, get a better sense of how they are pushing the company towards a common goal. Sometimes you're just not sure.
Has anybody worked in a place where you're switching seats on a quarterly basis or anything just to get a change of scenery?
Every day,
people moved around on a daily basis.
That worked. Wow. Yeah. Nobody like their own favorite places.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was a very dynamic.
Taking a step back here, you know, what you guys are both describing are effects, right? They're measures that your organization took to instill or create an environment that has a certain culture, right? Which is flexibility, which is cohesiveness, which is interdisciplinary. And so, like, what Corey is saying is, like, what's important to do at the beginning of the design project during this sort of office shuffle is to say, okay, are we in a do we all work together? Are we liable? Are we flat? Right? What are those principles that we're going to work with? Because, you know, just doing that might not work for every organization. It might be terrible for some organizations. But neither bad nor good, right? But knowing what that identity wants to be, that's how you can make those decisions, right? So that's, you know, the idea doesn't start at, let's try moving this around. The idea starts at, okay, should we be more flexible? Is it more creative for us? Does it work better for us? Or not? It's not universal.
Because there's also this, it's also very easy to just follow the trends. There are other, you make this cool thing is happening over there and you do the same thing. But it might be like exactly, I'm just trying to reinforce the point you were making. If you're a company that's in your hands on engineering kind of firm, maybe doing that should be more for your culture. It's all about setting, like any other design sort of task, like the first thing is setting up the problem. What are your goals so that you can really know how you're really differentiating or creating something new? Because if everything is very loose, like you can do anything and it can be an answer. But if you define the problem very well from the beginning, so set up your identity or whatever it would be, that it'll actually help you do things that you can see or not if it's fulfilling that goal. But if you don't have a specific goal to try to reach, it will be very hard to say if it was successful or not. So creating those parameters from the beginning are very important.
In just touching again on the identity piece, and then also like doing things and testing, doing different things within the working environment to try to understand which ones are more aligned with the identity and which ones necessarily aren't. When you do have that alignment with the physical space and the design, it actually helps with not only like attracting like people and talent that you would like to hire, because ultimately if you're with, you know, it's attracting talent and retaining them is one of the most expensive things that companies go through, if not the most. When you do that, when you align the design with the identity in the physical space, then the likelihood of you attracting the right type of people that are going to stay and like help you grow your business, the probability of that is higher than somebody going and maybe you're not totally under and under, you don't totally understand the identity of who you are, and the space doesn't correlate with that. The likelihood of then maybe staying there for a shorter period of time and then going to another place that it, that is that way, that is aligned with what they're looking for, it just helps, because it's expensive to, once you do actually attract the right people, it's you have to train those people, and it's a really expensive process to then lose them. So.
Good point. Maybe you could talk a little bit about why have physical space at all?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and because certainly the technology is there to work virtually, and there are some folks in kind of that are like actual manufacturing products, and in that sense, if you're working for a company like that, you kind of need a place to do that stuff. But for companies that operate in the cloud and don't have that manufacturing base, you could theoretically work virtually and not actually have the office or go through that expense. And we have folks that are doing that now, or working virtually. I'm sure there are others that are working out of a physical office, but do we have anybody that doesn't have an office right now or is working with a team that doesn't have an office? Could you maybe just talk about what that's like and just explain a little bit how that's working for you guys? Are you looking to create that environment like independent of like the engineers, or would it be a space where everybody is kind of like working out together as opposed to like borrowing space from them?
We're just doing it as a startup. And
yeah, no, totally. I'm just curious.
It's more geographical, so the rationale behind it.
Yeah.
People are going to be in Boston, and the developers and engineers are elsewhere. They're kind of in the area, or maybe.
I'd be interested to know how that works out for you guys.
I don't like it. I don't think it's long term. I feel like collaboration is really good to be there. So I enjoy face to face seeing and meeting them. But then when I'm working, I need kind of my own space to do my thing.
Yeah, right.
For me to get all the way up there, it's in Denver. I love to. I love Washington. So it's not one of the things to be difficult to have to go there.
Yeah. Interesting. One of the things that kind of like that I think about is there are, again, especially in technology companies, you have the sales crew and you have the engineering crew, and typically just the personalities are very different. But in looking at the companies that have done it like successfully and just kind of like merging those two types of people, not everybody has a different personality, but I'd be interested from you guys is like what have you seen successful where companies do? I mean, you have the engineers who are like some of them don't like light, then you have the salespeople who like are like more just outward and extroverted. How do you, and you have one space, right? Like people aren't Google where you can have like a hundred different working environments. What are some of the things that you're seeing companies do creatively and not by spending a ton of money? How kind of support that collaboration and doing it so people can still get their work done. But
I mean, Yeah, I mean, there's so much. I mean, that's a very important distinction. I mean, very important sort of about things to sort of know, first of all, like this ability, how people are productive, you know, in different ways, you know, different teams work in different ways. So the one thing that I was going to touch up a little bit earlier, and maybe I can start going into the conversation right now, is the idea of when you are in your stage of company. So if you are a very startup, early stage, first of all, just to identify the various stages, right? There's the 1 to 10 to 20 people who have stages of a company where you are completing your startup. Then you start growing a little bit more and you're 20 to 50 people. You're 50 to more, I don't know, 100 to 1,000. And there's different sort of stages throughout that. So one thing that is very important and specifically clients that, well, companies that are, first of all, you have to identify which stage you are in so that you identify like what is more beneficial for you at that point. Something like the Cambridge Innovation Center is kind of set up for companies at that kind of early stage. And one of the reasons it works pretty well is that it actually, you can have these different sort of setups and it doesn't cost you a lot of money right in the first stage. When you're really starting out, you don't have as much, you have so many risks that you're running against, right? So you don't want to invest all this capital in building out a stage that does all these different things, right? So ideally you would have, if you had all the money in the world, your company would have a big amount of space where you could have space for engineers, your space for your team, which is more loud, maybe a lot of calls, and a space where everybody could meet and collaborate, and conference rooms where everybody could do their thing, phone booths where people could make calls. But the problem with that, though, is that if each company is doing that on their own, usually a lot of these spaces end up being used very small amounts of time. So for example, a lot of companies will build out, I don't know, 2 conference rooms or conference rooms. You need your conference room, but 90% of the time the conference room is sitting there empty, right? So if you just spend all this money buying this real estate, put in, I don't know, 1 or 2 conference rooms, but 90% of the time it's not being used, so it's a waste of space. So places like innovation centers and these kind of core spaces, these kind of spaces, one of the main attractive points of it is that they're able to lower the prices of being in these spaces because you have access to still all these same resources. But you don't have to pay for all of it. If the price for it, you have access to beautiful conference rooms like this, but if you're paying only a portion of it, because there's 20 other companies paying for that same thing. In terms of usefulness, in terms of usability of it, it works out in the end because all of you just use one kind of it, so it doesn't matter. So that's something that from the life experience is a way to sort of overcome some of these issues, especially when you're in your earlier stages, where of course you also want to just focus on building your product, building your company. You might not have as much time to, okay, I'm going to get the space, and I have to get the internet, and I have to get, I don't know, figure out leasing issues, and get a 1-year lease, or 5-year lease, or 10-year lease. These spaces, a lot of them are like monthly leases. So again, you don't want to invest a lot, especially if space where you're, the time where you're growing very quickly.
So I don't know, it's more towards her a little bit. I work at the startup. It's actually at a startup accelerator like that.
It's an incredible
lab,
right?
Yeah, incredible lab, yep. And wow, we all sit very close together, like the engineers right here and the sales people are here. And we're like, we've outgrown it by a lot, which is why we're moving in January. And so we get complaints that like people say, like, oh, we're in a call center, they can't hear us. But at the end of the day, I do think it's really helpful that we're all together, especially when you're building that product and it's so early, because the sales guys are, you know, you're going to hear what's going on, what merchants think of it, what they like, don't like, and to be able to walk over to engineers and say that, as well as have that personal relationship with them because you got lunch together that day, they're going to, you know, be like, all right, they're telling the truth, or they're going to have the strength to say their opinion, whether that's feasible or not feasible. And so it's just me, though, then also get headphones or, you know what I mean, figure it out a little bit. So it's adjusting on both sides, but I do think it's been really helpful. As long as conference is going to be very proper.
And it was a very practical question underlying all that. And that's how do you get these different people to mix in a very small amount of space? So a couple of really simple solutions that people come across. One, headphones is a great one. The other side of that is headsets. investing in really high quality headsets. We've had people that do lots of call center work saying that once they've had really good headsets, they're people that are on the phone all the time talk at a much lower volume. They don't feel like they have to scream all the time to get people to hear them. So that lowers overall sound levels. Furniture, there's a lot of ways that you can sort of buy furniture that maybe has a little bit higher partitions. Not that that's actually going to make that much of a difference when it comes to physical sound, but it gives people a sense of enclosure and will make people, again, speak a little bit more quietly than they would in a wide open space where sometimes people are encouraged to speak a little bit louder. It's very sort of subconscious. The other thing that we've done is even in a very small space, you can take sort of your engineering group, your sales group, wherever it is, and to them not be right up against each other and put a common space in the middle. So kitchen, sofa, TV, something like that where that's where people can mix and then a little bit of physical separation. I mean, it doesn't even have to be 6 feet, right? It doesn't have to be a ton, but again, there's a perception that there's a zone here and there's a zone there. Unless, of course, you're like Dimitri's company where you think everybody should be together, and then that's an issue that is very, very structural. Much more quickly than the point of non-department on
that. I think too,
I was just going to ask a question. We are about 16 people and we're about to move into space. So right now we're all on top of each other and before they want to meet us. So one of us would get on the phone and I think I would get my voice and it would drop or somebody else, one person would get on the phone and it would just drop the whole room. We were hoping, in theory, that if we have 20 people,
that one voice roughly. Is that, you think that theory, or do you think it's just that? Well, there's actually actual white noise that you can't actually buy.
We have
Bluetooth. Yeah, there's plenty small speakers everywhere, and it's not, it's, so when you start talking, you're not talking over dead silence, so like, your voice doesn't stick out as much. If you can, so, answer sort of a little bit is starting to separate spaces. So having one common room where everybody sort of is in the same space is good from a camaraderie kind of point of view, but from a practical point of view, from a productivity point of view, it doesn't work as well. So there's things like white noise work super well. Adding a lot of sound deadening, sound absorptive material like furniture. If you're going through the furniture, let's say a couch piece, instead of it being hard materials that really lack sound, and sort of add to sort of the waste pollution in the room, something like that, which is absorptive, you know, like actually it's sound damage inside of it. And
not gonna
it's not going to matter much about. But again, the smaller the space, the more of these you have to sort of add into the space to actually make it sort of more cool. Adding music to certain parts, right? And that, again, music is something that almost works like white noise. It adds this human voice element to it that people can sort of. Let's see, if you start talking, it's not just one voice, it's a voice amongst others. So having areas that have these sort of different sort of sound bodies to them as well, naturally, so that when you do start talking, it's more, it's okay. You see that white noise.
Are you starting to talk a little bit about finding your voice and early stage startup, but you
had
some other points you wanted to add?
So, I mean, really, so are there, how many companies here are like super young, 1 to 4 people? Yeah, I mean, for that, I mean, so really, as far as defining culture, when you're really that young, it's, I would recommend, there's a ton of sort of co-working, different, like, this kind of spaces where you don't have to invest as much. So one thing I would ask though, for you to look at it, is that each one of these co-working spaces has a different feel to it, and they do represent an element of culture. Some of them are very hands down, you know, and you can do this easily, like in all these spaces, you can tour them, you can sort of see how they actually work inside before actually purchasing anything. So some of them are very, again, you can notice that the culture is set up where it's more like, okay, you're not supposed to talk to people almost, like you're bothering people. Other places are very like, love you done, you know, like everybody is saying hi, but it's kind of almost like friends living, working with each other. So touring a lot of spaces is the best thing to do almost, and So you don't, again, you don't invest on that kind of space when you're really that young. You actually focus on building your, because at that stage, there's a couple of things that are also important. When you really have to, being of course, building your product and your company is very important, but things that help tremendously is actually connections that you make to other people. So you got to connect to, maybe at that stage you're looking for a potential partner, right, to join your company and help form your company. You might be doing something that you think is a great idea, but actually talking to an expert in the field that kind of relates to it could shed light and like save you like months of work, you know, or actually save you your entire business. So when you're that young, there's really a lot of benefit to being like next to a lot of people.
So do you mean when you're working like at a cafe, you can't just ask for a next to you question? Same way?
Exactly. So like, so like, it's really about identifying.
They don't like being bugged. You can't just bug a stranger and be like, "What do you think about this logo? And how do you think about this mission?"
Because a cafe has a certain culture to it, right? So you're there to get your coffee. Some of them might have a very strong sense of what you're there to talk to people. But
how many of you have worked from cafes?
Yeah.
So I mean, it's just not feasible with both people sitting next to you. But in co-working spaces, depending on the culture, you can find a space that works for you where you can easily collaborate with other people from completely different types of industries or companies, and they serve a really great purpose. They're really good assets to your own startup in the early days and help you find your footing and your identity, as well as you're there serving a purpose for them. You're there to also be a resource.
So one of the things that I would suggest and look for, of course, is some of these things that we're talking about is looking. So first of all, identifying how you are yourself more productive. So when, as you're touring, like trying to find spaces that have those kind of. So if you're an engineer who you like working in the dark, that's it. Sorry for the stereotype, but like looking for those kind of spaces that have those qualities inside of it, right? You also, like we're talking about, I forget who was mentioning it. It does whatever you need to make a call when the office is so small. Like, you have to step outside of the office just to make a phone call, right? So understanding that there are these different needs, there are different modes of work. So a place that you want to work from, you should have all these different elements. So you should have places to go and make a phone call. Right? You should have these conference rooms that you need to work places.
Kevin?
Yeah, one of the things you always talk about.
Different heights. So we're putting them together.
So that's sort of like horizontal.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Exactly. So looking at all those different things, I think can add
tremendously to. Yeah, whatever makes people comfortable will make them productive. They want
it. It's another thing to watch.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I'm just curious if you guys have seen any of the aspects of this flex workplace trend, whereas maybe the worker doesn't feel as secure, lose their sense of space or identity. So I did think, oh, there's so many trends now that I've shared, but you might not even know that I was there yet. Connection with the company that feel like they don't actually replace the model. So I was just curious if you've seen any things where you feel like the problem is too far for the people.
Yes, I mean it's a good question. I think that there one of the trends I think that has gone, and this may work for some folks, but the totally like open working environment has been I think it's been something that where companies have gone to it, and partly because of driving down cost, and you can fit more people in a smaller square footage, so your rent is less. I think it's a little bit of a dangerous situation to get into because people still, to your point, and it's people don't want to feel like they're being like herded in like cattle. So one of the ways, and it kind of touches on your point, Kevin, too, is I think that it's important to give people choices. And if they feel like they can walk into the environment that they're working, and part of the part of the way that they feel comfortable is that they can choose to work the way that they want to work on that given day. And so maybe one of those things is a standing, having a couple standing desks so that, you know, people can work standing up for half the day. And maybe another portion of that is to have a more private area where they can go and, like, heads down and not be bothered. Or maybe they want to have more of a communal area where they're, you know, sitting around a table working together. So it's not necessarily about doing, like, one thing or the other on the spectrum, meaning, like, one being totally open, the other one being totally closed off and having a bunch of private area. It's about having a mixture of things that allow people to choose the way that they want to work on that given day.
So you really are thinking of giving them the opportunity to work the way they want. By the way, pretty much.
What's that? What phrase is that?
Work the way you want.
Or work the way you want.
Okay, this is tagline. But you want to give them a chance to move throughout the day. They don't necessarily want to be in the same space. You cannot do great heads on work.
One example we have from life practice was actually upstairs at Match Challenge. And it's not necessarily an example of a trend on a month, but it's how what would be perceived as a preference could be destructive. Right? So the way that Match Challenge used to be organized is that every team, most teams got their own individual people. And that's great, they have a proprietary area. There was 125 cubicles that were all 8x8 on the floor. Trish, you know what this is like. You can speak to this really well. And, you know, yes, you had your own dedicated space, but the reason we were brought in is that they were not having really any collaboration or sense of community between the teams there. People weren't identifying with the larger accelerator. They weren't also, like, their participation rates weren't what they wanted to be. So one of the first things that we did was to say, okay, rather than having one CEO, 120 cubicles, let's break this down into smaller groups for 30 to 35 company communities. Now, that may seem counterintuitive, like, we want to build a sense of community, why are we driving people apart? Because, like, you don't really know 125 other companies, which could be 400 other people, right? If you could know 30 other companies, that may be 100 people, right? And then start to develop some relationships. So that was, again, a counterintuitive thing, but it worked for them. And then the other was to go from roughly, you know, 90% closed, 10% open, to the almost inverted. There's much less personal space, much more shared space. Now, again, you know, there was a lot of pushback on losing that personal space for each company, and people said, oh, we need an area, we're there every day, and so on and so forth, and the transition period. But what ended up working out really well is that because we reduced that personal space, like John said, you know, we went to open space, so you could get a lot more people in there, we were able to provide much more amenity space. So the event space got larger, the kitchen got larger, we were able to fit it out with the workspaces in the kitchen, we were able to fit it out with a lounge, we added a 3,000 square foot lounge that never existed before. So there, all of a sudden there are these other places for people to go and work throughout the course of the day we're talking about. So that if you did need private time, you did need a different environment, you had somewhere to go. The way it was before, you were either in your cube or you were in the bathroom, right? That's pretty much it, right? Nowhere else to go. Because every person had so much space to themselves. You'll always be combating that, right? Because then there's a way you can take that too far. If there's all open space and nowhere else to go, then that's just as bad, right? Except that you're right on top of each other. So there's... You know, I don't think there's one line that you can say that the right tack or wrong tack.
I guess it just means, like, I went to art school and I had a studio. So, like, the idea of, like, having a place that accumulates creativity, like, gets down to me is creative. You know, like, so to have, like, a creative space out in front of everybody, like, me as an architect.
No, of course, know that. So yeah, I can talk directly about that. So, like, one of the strands, I guess, like, why people move to these big open spaces is that, again, not only is it cheaper because you can get a lot of people there, but I mean, there's less walls you have to build, less feedback, you know, so costs drive up immensely. that's one of the things to do it. But especially if you're trying to create a space for that enhancement of collaboration and moments you guys focus, you do so being completely exposed is not very good, because the more exposed you are, the more you are apt to be judged, right? So let's say you have a crazy project that you're working on, and if it's inside of your full studio, you might do something even crazier, you know, because there are not a lot of people judging you. Whereas if it's exposed and everybody's looking, you'll probably do what you're supposed to do, or like won't take as many risks. So like having a lot of private spaces for a lot of private moments is actually very important, because it allows you to be really be creative and really think. And even collaborate, right? So let's say I have this great idea for a project for my business that I want to do. I want to talk about it. The more exposed I am, the less likely I am to do it. Because people might think, oh, this guy's crazy, or that he's stupid, or you don't know what he's talking about. So creating safe environments where you actually, you're more open to actually talking is actually important. So like that's where the magic sort of comes in, as far as where can you have big open space where you have some sort of connection. It's an ability to see other people, but share and lower costs, you know, of like build out spaces. There are spaces that you need to have, which are very private for like a team, for instance, to a meeting session. I'm not going to have that for 50 people, you know, like drawing my secrets, you know, my secret partners, getting the board. So then mixing all of these, and, but also having spaces that are sort of shared are is important, because it allows you to do all these other things that you couldn't do. Because, like you were saying, there isn't enough real estate to do all these other things. But one other thing, one of the levels you can add to it, especially when you're just kind of hard for like us as architects, like we like to think that we know best, and like, oh, you design the space to be like this, and it shouldn't change, it should be exactly like it is. But one of the elements to introduce is actually this element of play, of experimentation. So, not only so that you come into the space, you're not feeling like it's completely finished already, and you don't think as much ownership of it. So one thing that we're doing in C3 is we have these different neighborhoods again to sort of help create some zones and small numbers of people to get to know each other, but you can actually get to help decorate the space, right? You actually choose the paint colors, choose what to add to the space. Then just the more you invest in the space, the more you really feel like it's more personal. And so in a way it's kind of a, but let's say you can even say, okay, we're gonna start with all shared desks, but let's say if it doesn't work, we'll change the next one. But having this element of
nothing's permanent,
and you can change it over time is actually important.
And can you add a little to that? I know you're going to talk about building out a space that suits your needs.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I'm a big proponent of balance between open space and closed spaces. And what that balance is for every organization is going to be. And that's what, again, where it comes back to understanding identity and understanding what you're. Right. You know, there are both sort of abstract criteria like identity and personality and character that are important, and there's also very pragmatic pieces of puzzle, right? To identify and design your space or start to look for things. How many square feet do you need? Right? This is a question you guys get all the time. We will have clients come tell us how many square feet they need based on the amount of square footage they have at CMC in their own personal space, right? Which you can't, if you have 25 square feet per person in your own dedicated office, it's not going to work, right? Because you need the kitchen, you need the conference room, you need space for storage, you need all those other things. And like, so putting together that program, that list of spaces, is a really key first step. And doing that, getting some input on it, getting some feedback is really important, because that sets it into, that sets pretty much everything in motion, right? So if I'm looking for 3,000 square feet of space, then I'm looking at a certain rent, I'm looking at certain neighborhoods, I'm looking at certain buildings that are going to have that kind of space, you're limiting a lot of things. So the decisions about culture start from like the very, 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 very first decisions and things on the ground. You know, and then budget is another thing. Budgets are oftentimes we find that as, again, as clients are starting to start develop an idea of space, you know, there's a budget in mind, and making sure that that is adequate and appropriate for what you guys imagine for yourselves is really too often very difficult, especially when it comes to furniture, because furniture is way more expensive than furniture should be. But those, I mean, as mundane as they are really important to establish your culture, right? So if I'm going to open up a financial services office and I've got an IKEA budget for furniture, it's probably not going to work for most of my clients, right? But if I'm a startup and I've got a bunch of engineers and we're young and, you know, we have feedback chairs and like your mom on Fridays, that works perfectly, right? So getting all those things in alignment is sort of hugely critical. I mean, is there anybody here, I think we've asked this question already, that's starting to build their space or design their space or look for space right now? And well, you guys have sort of set an idea of where, how you're going to set yourself up, right? You have two offices, or is that still up in the air? Right. And what are the, right now, where are you guys in the process? So what are the, right now, what are the criteria that are guiding your decision?
I've never done this before, so, you know, I'm started with the realtor.
Establishing that number of what's really necessary can really have a huge effect on your bottom line and on your culture, right? Again, going back to the size of space that you're talking about, you're saying that they're steering you toward a certain neighborhood because that's what's available there, right? The thousand square foot chunks. So that's going to set a certain tone for, like, who are your neighbors and, like, what kind of place are you working in? What are the buildings like there, right? So, you know, around North Station, there's lots of different theme buildings, you know, here's some of them. Financial district, there are more towers, right? So those are all sort of cultural decisions that start before you even, you know, talk to an architect, before you even sign a lease, you know, you're making cultural decisions. It depends a lot on how big your company is, right? So if you're like 1 to 10, there's a certain like range, and if you're like, you know, 50 to 100, that number will be smaller, right? So, I mean, generally we start around like 100, right? It's a good number to start with. That can be pretty dense, right, for high numbers of people. Sometimes you go a little higher, you can get lower than that. It depends on how much conference space you need, if you have open shop areas, an application and things like that. But if it's just office space, you know, between 80 to 100 is a healthy number you're looking for. Again, it also depends on are there shared bathrooms, joint bathrooms in your space? Is there shared kitchen? You can care about that kind of stuff. Or if it's just one space. You know, if you're designing an all inclusive workplace, like 100, I think it's a very safe, healthy number to be looking for. I don't know, John, you could probably answer this question. Like,
yeah, no, I think it's an interesting one because we get it a lot as well. We've seen 100 square feet per person work in certain circumstances. You do get, once you get kind of like to that 20 to 30 person number as far as headcount, that really, that square footage per person gets tough with the amount of like conference room and shared spaces that you end up having. You end up like cannibalizing those areas if people are, at that point, kind of like taking phone calls, maybe on the hallway or outside the building or whatever. Yeah. And so I've seen it, it's like 150 per person, is typically allows room for growth, and you have enough private area to be able to like function appropriately, and people have like, again, choices within the working environment, within the workspace. It was this metric that was always for like the law firm metric was like when you have everybody has individual offices and there's not a lot of communal area, it was like 250 like up to 300 square feet per person.
There's also a lot to do, especially when you think of these economic numbers, a lot of them are based on specific sizes of furniture, for example, that you use. You notice this learning from shared spaces that people usually tend to be in a lot of space, a lot less space than you think you do. And or put it differently, you tend to grow into the space that you have. Right? So like if you start off with like, oh, I have this huge desk and all these things, all these storage spaces, you'll fill it up with stuff.
Fish do that.
Yeah,
you put fish in a really good tank,
they'll
fill the tank.
Exactly. Yeah, so like, and so especially if you're starting, so these are kind of things that you can start and like sort of live right at the beginning, where if you, for example, in co-working spaces, you work with desks as small as 2x3 feet for a person. And a lot of times, all you need is a lot. And they have like this one small, huge storage space. A lot of the other stuff is not essential, right? As you move along, John was mentioning, you can start like with bigger spaces, and then, for example, we have different modular size desks. We have desks like 2.5 feet by 5 feet. We have desks that are 2x4, 2x3. And but if you might start with a bigger one, and then as you start adding people to your company, you reduce size. Problem with doing it that way is that you again come into the problem of space. All people, there's that culture change. Oh, we're in all my desks. I need space for all these papers because they're all too important. But that's where you can get really. That's where you can get really creative and really maximize your amount of space that you need is by starting from the beginning. For example, in the C3 space that we have in the CSC, just by the way you sort of put just even small things like desk alignment, and realizing like where you have wasted corridors. A lot of times, a lot of space is just wasted and create all these extra corridor space that you only use for circulation. And when the space is badly planned, like that can account for, I don't know, maybe 30-40% of your space just circulation space. Whereas if you plan very carefully, what we did there, you're able to put almost double the amount of that was initially planned. Just by being clever with layouts of the actual reducing desks, making them differently, and arranging the desks next to other sort of things adjacent to it. Instead of just thinking overall terms, but thinking is very close to it, but I think it can work a lot in terms of maximizing your work. Because then you create this extra picture, because you're able to, instead of working with a standard 2.5x5 desk, you have a 2x3 desk, which by analyzing your culture, your role, that you actually that's all you need, so then you can create all of a sudden an extra conference room. There are two phone rooms, an extra kitchen, by depending on your numbers, of course.
Do you any other questions?
I have another project that just based on your guys' discuss. I've worked at consulting firms that have dedicated project spaces, which a small space, pretty small, it's like 8x8 desks in it for a team, working together on an occupied project for three months. And you might come together, and when you want to engage with your team, you're in this space working, space has like persistent memory, it's that problem. You leave the space when you want to take a break, go to lunch, do some private, and you always come back. And it's a different sort of like a effective device for collaboration. Like very different from long materials, plus space, and also different from the top of the systems. Because thinking about mixing stuff up, there are such things as like project work, labeled for those 2 months.
But we're designing those into a co-working space right now, and we see a little bit more than that. It's an interesting model for, and again, totally organization. Have that kind of thing when you're collaborating. And it's really, they can be really simple spaces. Sometimes, if you want to have like a room that's just all ideas and everything, or probably three, or you want to place it all time for everyone's drawing and stuff. It's really, it's one of those amenities that you can afford to have if things are not that properly. Otherwise, I'm a little busy. person open space. It's just really difficult going on operationally. I mean, one, just think it to another real life example of that is we work with a company that has like various projects going on at all times. And so they have, when we were going through the search with them, one of the criteria was to have like multiple different breakout rooms where they would have like two or three people from each team, project team, working in together at all times. And then they had, you know, other open like kitchen areas and some just soft seating areas to like take a break and like watch TV or play, you know, video games or whatever. Again, it's very like organizational based and how your company works. But that was an important criteria for them. They wanted to literally have multiple different rooms where people would go in, and based on what project you were associated with, that's where you would work at. And they were kind of like the size of an office, but you would have two or three people in the country. It's similar to, they actually spawned out of the CIC. And they were used to working in those environments where it was kind of like close quarters, and people had like two or three people to an office, and then utilized the common areas to kind of like get out of those environments. So it does. It kind of all goes back to understanding how you work and the culture and identity of what you're trying to create.
A friend of mine, who also works in the culture space, was telling me that the way you talk about culture and branding is that your brand is a promise, and your culture is delivery on that promise. And I know that Vince, you in particular work a lot with branding strategy and finding a suitable space and creating something that speaks to the branding too.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit more about that end of your work?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the things that generally you find in startups is that you will have developed some sort of graphic identity or collateral material long before you're looking at this. And so you start to already ask and answer questions about brand and about what that means. I'll take an example of the Grommet, who's also speaking to earlier this year. Those guys were out in Lexington, three different buildings, obviously, very challenging for them from a cultural standpoint. And from the very beginning, the questions that they're asking about who they were, what their company was, they're focused on makers, they're focused on the sense of craft, they're focused on things that felt authentic. That they were able to identify those, we were able to help them identify what those driving principles would be very early on. They had just gone through a graphic rebranding process that gave a lot of look and feel and emotion to the space as we designed it. There's a lot of input that came from that. Now, if you go into their space, I mean, they described it themselves without any prompting from us as like a buying of their brand. But where that came through is decisions. One very key decision. Their office is seriously located on the line between Cambridge and Somerville. They have a Cambridge address and they have a back door to the Somerville address. And they choose to use the Somerville address because they identify more with like the Somerville mentality than Cambridge mentality. That's a very, very conscious decision that, a lot of people wouldn't think about, but these guys do. And when they meet with other people, it's something that comes with every single time. They send these correspondence or anything. Looking at where they source materials from, how they made their people out, what types of, when it came down to working with contractors, we looked at both union and non-union contractors. Typically, people want to work with non-union contractors because they're expensive. But one thing that they were focused on, again, was the craft of making. They wanted people to have experience in making, and they had a dedication to supporting labor. Again, so there are all of these pieces and decisions that can be made along the way that go back to their core values of who are they as a company and why are they making these decisions. We sourced a lot of furniture there for down in Bedford, industrial salvage furniture, and they wanted to speak to that history of making craft and industry. And so they were now to walk through their space, every single thing you see is a decision that was made based on their identity and who they are as an organization. From the time you walk in, it's all they pick up steel and build paint to, you know, the custom lighting solution that we did for them. That's made like a very cutting edge lighting tubes, right? And so it's a way for them and for any organization to answer questions that come up through the design process. So back to what we talked about earlier. You know, without that, everything that we talk about here, they're just ideas and they're just like ways that, like things you can try out. But if you have a sense of identity and brand, then you can help make those decisions. You know, now, when it comes to things like recruiting, we were talking about earlier, they bring people in and you get what they're about, you get that they're like a little bit crunchy, that they've got like, you know, a very, very collegial atmosphere. It's not like a place where you go and like test down. They have engineers there and they have salespeople there, they have all the characters that you guys would imagine, but they work in a very different way than you see anywhere else because, you know, day one of an expectation for set when you walk in the door. That's true for your staff, it's true for visitors, for potential clients, potential investors, people that they bring. And you know, the same thing that you get out of having graphic identity and brand, they get out of having that space. But it's what you live in every day. So you know, it's our position, our proposition that these things sort of infuse in the way that people work and the culture that they bring to the office place, right? Maybe I'm intentional, maybe not. You know, those space decisions, again, everything down to that address and that amount of square footage, those things matter. Those things, they say something about who you are as an organization.
Do any of you have any last words on my idea
that we'll have folks collaborating, maybe any last tips? I think where you go in the kitchen is one of the most important decisions that you make, because that is where a lot of collaborating happens. And again, I'll actually go back to the Grommet as an example. They took two suites on the same floor, separated by a common corridor, which is not an ideal situation. We made a very conscious effort to move the kitchen from the back of one suite to the middle between the two, so that you wouldn't have these two different communities, and the kitchen would be sort of really far away from one group and very convenient for the other. But then it became a mixing place, right? And that's where the people come together. That's, you know, where it is and then how it's designed, it's a place that's welcoming, like this, that's flexible, that people can use in a workspace, it's hugely important. And the other soft spaces like lounge areas, sofas, those kinds of spaces, I mean, that's, we're talking about inspiring collaboration, you know, those are the kinds of environments that are more conducive to that. Not always just like a portable store, the conference room certainly probably leads to collaborative places.
I have a question that maybe
contributes to the center,
but what about just getting shit done versus collaboration? And there's, I think, kind of like a over zealousness of everybody work together. And I'm, as a company guy, like super interested in the culture of the company. But I also think there's a factor of we need to get productively done sometimes. How does space balance out those two things? Getting shit done and collaboration.
I would say that's a cultural question, actually, okay, rather than a space question, right? Like, you could use the same space to collaborate and work together. It's like very open to get shit done and hack away and like really get some work done. Again, like, there's a switch that happens at one point and people are like, "That's the mode that you're in." I don't know if that space is going to do it, right? But you know, you can put everybody in dedicated carols, right, where they can be super focused. That's where they sit all the time. But then, you know, maybe they're doing the work all day, but they're not going to be talking to the person next to them and figuring out, okay, I've got a problem, you know, we can troubleshoot this together. It's, I don't know, it's a very sort of personal question, right, for an organization and how you operate and how you into the function, and what does that mean to you? What are those modes like? Like, what are you doing when you're in that mode versus what are you doing when you're in like, the sort of ideation mode?
Yeah, a lot of it is exactly what you're saying. So there's different things you can do, right? There's one is the actual physical space, like creating spaces where you don't have distractions, where maybe you have a carousel, where you can't see somebody sitting in front of the wall a little bit higher, you can't see anybody inside of you. And so in the lighting is kind of one focus, so you can get no distractions, so you can create a lot of those kind of spaces. And there's a lot of things you can do to sort of make distractions disappear, right? But a lot of it also can just be done from a culture point of view, right? It's all about setting up the rules for a certain area. So you can say, this is the area where we do a lot of that and you can see free space. This is open, full tables area, where you can go to make sales call. Anybody in that area knows that if other people start picking up their phone to make a sales call, that's expected this, or you won't start yelling at them for being loud or something. If you're there, you know that that's what it's supposed to be, right? Same thing with a lot of things. Sometimes you can do that very subtly, you know, but just playing music is here. It's already more loud. You already have a place that is like a library, you know, very quiet. Creating space out can also help that. So you can do both things with space. You can actually signal that directly. There's also an element of it that can be done just by creating rules and ways to
Yeah, so that's setting expectations and communicating that. You know, if you walk into a space and you're wondering, should I work here? Will I be productive with this team? And they're working it in a way that you know you'd never get shit done in that environment, then you know that that's not for you. And if it's too quiet or too loud or there's too many distractions or not enough, just being aware of that and recognizing that, that's definitely more of a culture thing than saying, oh, well, we need to structure things differently the way that the space is. You can do things that reflect your culture, but to create it artificially when people aren't going to respond to that positively, they're not going to be as productive.
I mean, that's one thing underlying your question is like, our collaboration is getting shit done mutually exclusive, right? And like what it, like, I think it sounds like maybe like your concern is less about collaboration, more about like messing around and like not doing work, which is a little bit different, right?
Yeah, I think in genre, the specific use case, and John and I were talking about this, is the balance of selling this to someone who's very concerned about productivity and helping them understand that there's probably needs to be some element of collaboration taken into account. I don't know if you're specific on that, but that would be another one.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I would say that you could go to this person might be, you know, look at some of the most productive organizations in the world, right? And what, how do they work? How does Facebook work? How do YouTube work? I don't know what my work is doing.
Yeah, it's constraints, though, right? I mean, say, when I think about what you really can't create 100 different work styles and be spaces limited on really square footage.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of like helping them think through how to make the best use of that.
Right.
And make them understand that it's okay to have some spaces not dedicated to sitting down with a laptop or anything.
Would you say that if you went back and started from like the left basement and asked him questions about his identity and the culture side of things, would those answers come easily? You're shaking your head.
Maybe texting the fireman down here. Like I'm texting him relentlessly during this whole discussion, so he would not have answered that.
But yeah, it's understanding that, and then maybe 90% of your space is that, right? But then, so you acknowledge that by making most of the space like that. There are just dedicated spaces. More specific spaces, which are open to that kind of conversation. So it's like, oh, energy has to be, if then it would work, then it would fit the culture. You do have, almost would have the same history, really.
Think about it this way. Sometimes you make something really simple, it's incredibly common. But if you get it right, does these things. So I can come from experience in our space, which is probably much denser than the spot world. People talk the phrase that I do all the time. So you can do it.
They can't believe how.
To help reduction, how much they get done. You can do that. You have to think about it. So hard as you work, because you're answering questions that this folks post to. But the harder you get, the more you think about it, the closer you're going to be able to get in that space that does it. They don't just happen. That's what that. You just can't sum this off. You can't go and say, well, I saw that person. But ask the sort of people so you can't do values from the space and the culture. It's one point I want to do is this possible.
Well, oh, here, one more.
Can you just toss out some examples? Since you probably see a lot of development teams growing in these, they're like, don't do that, you think to yourself. Don't do that.
I would say that most organizations aren't going to operate very successfully in a virtual environment, and so space is a reality. Physical space is a reality. Looking at that as an asset versus a liability, so changing your perspective on that and making it something that's a strength rather than something that you just like see drained from your bank account every month is imperative. The companies that do that well, in my experience, is they tend to be successful at what they're doing. The companies that don't do that well, don't.
I don't ignore the significance of space, like John said. The worst thing you can do is like to spend no money on it and think that's not important, think it doesn't matter, and say, okay, my people will work wherever, right? Because then you won't have people for very long. Something that you can do that's almost equally bad is waste a ton of money designing a beautiful space and spending like buying the most expensive stuff because like that's what you see everywhere else for a 3-year lease when you don't even know if you're going to be 10 people next month or 20 people next month. That's a huge mistake that we see people make all the time. They pour a ton of money into space. As architects, obviously, we love it because it's fun, but it's not necessarily a wise business decision, which, again, in the long run for us, is not a wise business decision for us, right? If our clients spend all that money to start business.
They won't be able to call you back.
Exactly. So I think those are two big things. The other issue that we have is not physical, but is really more organizational, is when you're asking any of these kinds of questions, whether it's space, identity, values, who's doing the asking and who's being asked, and like what that group is, like who's going to steer a process of like finding a space, designing it, and sort of executing it. That is one of the biggest decisions you can make. Is like, what is the right amount of people in a group? And the answer is not nobody, and the answer is not all, right? It's somewhere in the middle for everybody. But that has a very, very big impact on how efficient you can be in that process, and also how happy you're going to be with the product, right? If the right people are speaking to it, and sometimes the right people don't want to give time to it, and there has to be an attitude for that.
Okay, great. Well, the piece is here, and we'll just start
going towards it.
Yeah. Sir, Laura will pull it out.